If you wanted to pick an exciting time and place in which to live, you couldn't do much better than Paris at the turn of the century. Paris, then, was the center of everything new and exciting in the world. The first cars, the first electric lights, elevators, refrigerators, bicycles, and the world's first flying machine, piloted by the man all of Paris knew and admired, Alberto Santos Dumont. Today, no one's heard of him, but back then, nobody had heard of the Wright brothers. To the people of Paris and London and New York, Alberto Santos Dumont was the first man to fly. Writer and editor Paul Hoffman tells the story in a new book called Wings of Madness.
This was in 1901. He actually did some work a couple years earlier, but in 1901, he flew around the tip of the Eiffel Tower before the largest crowd that had ever assembled in the world, tens of thousands of people, and they included kings and queens and heads of state and the Rothschilds and Cartiers and many of the rich families. That was the crowd in which Santos Dumont traveled in. But they also included all the beggars and poor people in Paris because there was a prize put up, $25,000, 100,000 francs, for the first flying machine that in 30 minutes could fly a 9-mile course that included going around the tip of the Eiffel Tower.
So what did this airship look like?
Well, what Santos Dumont did was take a conventional spherical balloon, you know, a hot air balloon, and he stretched it so it's in the now familiar cigar shape, and he made it out of a very thin Chinese silk that had to be varnished 7 times so it wouldn't be permeable to the hydrogen air that he put in it. And then he owned more cars in Paris than anybody else, and he took 2 of his motorized tricycles, and he took the motors from them and combined them and hung them off a very small basket that he put below this balloon. I mean, the basket was so small he could barely turn around. He was a very light man. He weighed about 100 pounds. He was 5'4". And he made everything as light as possible. It couldn't carry anyone heavier into the air. It just carried him and an ample lunch basket.
But it was drivable. I mean, he could direct it where he wanted to go.
It was absolutely drivable. I mean, the scientific leaders of the day thought that he was absolutely insane to combine an internal combustion engine. And remember, these engines being the very first of their kind, not only did sparks shoot out of them, but often fire. And to combine this with a hydrogen-filled balloon, we all know how flammable hydrogen is.
Does sound kind of crazy, doesn't it?
People thought it was crazy. But then they all turned out to watch him. And the science fiction writers of the day, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, they all came because they had written about flying machines, of course, but they didn't really know whether they would see them in their own lifetime. They had a betting pool among themselves. Some thought that the balloon would explode. Others thought that a strong wind would push it back and that he'd become impaled on the top of the tower. But he made it around.
Where did he come from? This is just, he sort of appears out of nowhere in our histories. But who was he? Where did he begin to think this way?
Well, he grew up in Brazil, and his father owned the largest and most automated coffee plantation in Brazil, a couple hours outside Sao Paulo. And it was a very large plantation. It had 60 miles worth of railroad that his father had built. He had been a Paris-trained engineer, and they imported 7 large locomotives from Europe for this. And they had very advanced machinery. And these machines were always breaking down. And Santos Dumont, as a young child, learned to fix the coffee plantation apparatus, and he learned to drive the locomotives. He was driving them around at the age of 8, these huge machines. And he was very mechanically inclined. He had 7 brothers and sisters who spent most of their time horseback riding around the plantation while he spent a lot of time fixing the machines and reading. His father had all sorts of engineering texts from his college days, and Santos Dumont immersed himself in these, read all of Jules Verne by the age of 10. And he, being in this remote part of Brazil, believed that in Europe there must be flying machines that people were using. In fact, he thought flying machines must be going across the Atlantic. And it so happened when he was 18 that his father was thrown from a horse and had was serious paralysis that Brazilian doctors couldn't cure. And he decided to go to Paris in search of treatment. So he brought young Alberto, who was 18, along to Paris.
So moving to Paris really did make the difference for Santos Dumont. He discovered a world that he hadn't thought even existed?
He did. The year he arrived, 1891, Peugeot manufactured 2 automobiles. He bought one of them. And by 1892, he owned more cars than anyone else in Paris. I mean, he looked up at the skies, though, and he was stunned to see that they were astonishingly deficient in flying machines. In fact, there were none in sight. All he saw was this one balloon, hot air balloon, that was tethered to the ground.
Who was it who finally gave him his first trip?
There were two balloon makers there who had made many of the hot air balloons that you saw, and he went to them, and they gave him his first trip, and he fell in love with the air, and he wrote some beautiful poetic diaries. He would describe, for instance, people as looking like ants, you know, as small as ants. Well, of course, that's a cliché today, but it wasn't a cliché then. In fact, he was the first to note that. And he preached this kind of aerial spirituality. He would throw dinner parties in his high-ceilinged apartment on the Champs-Élysées, in which he had built a special table with unusually long legs, so the table was very near the ceiling, and chairs with unusually long legs. And his butler would help people climb stepladders to sit in these chairs around the table. And the Rothschilds and Cartiers and Roosevelts dined with him. And he did this because he wanted people to imagine the joy and the thrill of being up in the air.
It's a part of his whole enthusiasm for the idea, isn't it? The passion that he brought to this. And in fact, it was that passion, it seems to me, that you're saying propelled him forward in his pursuit of a machine that could fly.
Absolutely. I mean, he believed that if you could go up in the air, you would literally free yourself of your earthly problems, and that you'd be able to experience, you know, clear your head and experience who you really were. So he preached this kind of aerial spirituality. And he also believed in this very idealistic goal that the flying machine would bring about world peace, because you could go and visit people with whom you had differences, and then you would see that their cultures weren't all that different from your own, and you might get to know them, and the hostilities would be done away with. You know, one thing that struck me is, you know, Americans had never, today, have not heard of him. But in 1901, he was one of the most famous people in the world. The London Times wrote that 25 years from now, when the names of people who have done great things will have been forgotten, except for one man, Saintus Dumont. I mean, you could walk down the Champs-Élysées and vendors would sell cookies that were shaped in his silhouette and cookies shaped like the balloon that he had flown. And he was immaculately dressed. He wore a Panama hat, which he once had to use to fan out some sputtering sparks coming out of the engine when he was up there. And it singed the edge of his hat, which collapsed in a funky kind of way. Well, men all over Paris bought Panama hats, and they'd hold them over their stove flames so that they'd be singed in the same way. And the other funny thing is, when he won the Deutsch Prize for going around the Eiffel Tower, the French judges wished that a native Parisian had won the prize, so that they lied and said that he had taken 30 seconds more than the prescribed time limit. And eventually they gave in because the beggars and poor people to whom Saintus Dumont had promised the prize started to riot. And the judges wanted to quell the riot, so they gave him the prize. But Saintus Dumont was distressed because at that time men only had pocket watches, and he couldn't risk taking his hands off the controls to fish out his pocket watches. He needed a watch so he could keep the judges honest. So he complained to his friend Louis Cartier, the jeweler. And Cartier said, I'll come up with something. And he made the first male wristwatch for Saintus Dumont. In fact, you can go to Cartier, as I did fairly recently here in New York, and you could buy one of these for $17,000 if you'd like.
He seems to have been a kind of a marketing genius. Some of this was just showmanship, though, wasn't it? I mean, with that first airship, the one with the machine slung underneath to make it go, I gather he actually used to bar hop, taking his airship from one lamppost to the next?
Yes. This was extraordinary to me because, you know, we live in an age where there are no personal flying machines. I mean, we've heard the promise of that for decades. I used to work for Michael Eisner at Disney, and he could take a helicopter from his home to the Disney lot, but he could not fly to Spago's or fly to Barney's for shopping. Well, Saintus Dumont was able to shrink the balloon of his airship so small that he could land in front of his apartment in the Champs-Élysées, tie reins from it to the gas lamppost there. And then at night, he would take it and fly to Maxim's, the restaurant he always dined at, and he would hand the reins from the flying ship to the doorman, who would either hold it or tie it to where the horses were tied up while Saintus Dumont was inside. He went shopping in this. In fact, the first traffic tickets in Paris were issued to Saintus Dumont, not because he blocked the traffic, he was up in the air, but hundreds of pedestrians rushed into the streets, blocking the horse carriage traffic.
He sounds like he was an amazing and very bubbly man, but he has a kind of a sad later story, doesn't he?
He does. And even then, even in his youth, when he was enjoying obviously, these aerial firsts that he was doing every day, and he enjoyed the crowds, and he was a showman. When he was on an individual basis with people, he was tongue-tied, particularly with women who threw themselves at him. I mean, he could barely get a word out of his mouth. And he seemed to be most at home when he was up above the clouds in this kind of solitary state that he would find himself in then. And certainly once the Wright brothers upstaged him by proving that they had been the first to fly a plane, the Wright brothers became the darlings of Paris because they flew in France, eclipsing Saint-Dumont's achievements. And then you have World War I, where he was horrified to see what he thought was a machine that would bring about world peace being used to kill people. And then he was up against the fact that all his lobbying that he spent 20 years doing after World War I to get heads of state to give up their bombers and to return planes to peaceful purposes, obviously he was not successful. And he returned to Brazil, and in 1932, the first civil war broke out in the world in which both sides were bombing each other. There had been plenty of military conflicts in which planes were involved, but not cases in which brothers were bombing brothers. And a plane was shot down near a hotel in which Saint-Dumont was staying. He was having breakfast, and he couldn't stand it, and he got up from breakfast, and he returned to the elevator, and he told the elevator operator that this horrible deaths that the plane had brought about weren't what the pioneers of aviation like himself had in mind, and he went back to his room and he hung himself.
Well, it's a terrible end to an otherwise exciting story, a man who really did bring genius to it, and it's not his fault that he wasn't the first to fly.
No, absolutely. And what he did, I mean, his historical contribution, he did fly the first successful powered flying machine. It just wasn't a plane. It was an airship. It was a powered balloon. So he deserves that credit. And he inspired a whole generation of people to go into aeronautics by his showmanship.
Paul Hoffman is an award-winning science writer and the former editor-in-chief of Discover magazine. His new book is called Wings of Madness, Alberto Santos-Dumont and the Invention of Flight.